Let's open our Bibles today to Luke chapter number 19, where we left off last session. This is a parable that Jesus tells, probably while he's having lunch with Zacchaeus, the chief tax collector in Jericho. It is the ninth day of the first Jewish month in the year AD 30. So we are only a handful of days away from Jesus dying and rising again. And so Jesus has stopped here for kind of a midday break. He's still got about six more hours or so of walking to do after he finishes here. But it is a steep walk, but it's not horrible. And so he, after the meal, decides that he needs to tell a parable to illustrate the importance of saving the lost and how important it is to do God's work in that expectation. And so this is the parable, verse number 11. Of Luke 19. As they heard these things, he proceeded to tell a parable because he was near to Jerusalem and because they supposed that the kingdom of God was to appear immediately. So many of these folks are believing they're living in the time of the coming of the kingdom, you know, with the resurrection of the dead and the transformation of the living and the new heavens and the new earth displacing the old heavens and the old earth, that the Messiah is going to rule and reign for eternity. So that's what they're expecting. Jesus, though, needs them to understand that that won't happen this time around, this visitation. That's for later. That's for his second coming. But he wants them to be ready to do the work of the kingdom while the king is away. And so here's the parable. He said to them, a nobleman, or we would probably think of like a king, somebody in charge, went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and then return. So this is a prediction of Jesus leaving this planet and going away back to the Father, and then he will be back. So this is a reference to the time between the first and second comings. Verse 13, calling 10 of his servants, he gave them 10 minas each. Now, each mina is several months' worth of wages. So we're talking about 30-some months worth of wages that he's giving, the expectation that he's going to be gone for a while. And so he said to them, engage in business until I come. Now, this represents the fact that when Jesus leaves, he puts his people into positions of responsibility. And we're still there today. Each generation is expected to occupy until Jesus comes back, to stay busy in his service. And so that's what we're doing right now. We're using the resources that he gave us to do his work. Verse number 14. But his citizens hated him and sent a delegation after him saying, we do not want this man to reign over us. Now that is an important little twist to the story because that represents the Pharisees and other non-believers that don't want Jesus to be their king, to be their Messiah. And so they're doing everything in their power to stop him from coming to a place of authority. That will be very important toward the end of the parable. Now, it is interesting that this is true life stuff here. We know that King Herod the Great, when he died and had left his will appointing his son Archelaus as the next king of the Jews, Archelaus had to go to Rome in order to have that that idea of King Herod approved. And when he left to go, a whole bunch of people tried to stop Archelaus from becoming the king. And then there are other examples of other people that had to go to Rome in order to get their position of authority approved, and the people objected to it. And so those are real-life things that Jesus is actually using here. But in this case, it's all about those that hate him. Now, verse number 15. When he returned, having received the kingdom, so now we're at the second coming of Jesus, he ordered these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know what they had gained by doing business. So this is now Jesus checking in with those that he gave the resources to. The first came before him saying, Lord, your mina has made 10 minas more. And he said to him, well done, good servant. Because you've been faithful in very little, you shall have authority over 10 cities. So this guy did a good job. And so Jesus indicates that in the millennial kingdom, he's going to have places of responsibility. Verse 18, the second came saying, Lord, your mina has made 5 minas. And he said to him, ah, you will be over 5 cities. Then another came saying, Lord, here is your mina, which I kept laid away in a handkerchief. Basically, he buried it. For I was afraid of you because you are a severe man. You take what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. Now, let me break in here and remind you that when we read parables, we need to understand that there are key points that we're intended to understand, but there are also incidental things that may not parallel to what we're actually talking about. Jesus is not the meanie that this guy is portrayed as. So we don't need to throw that into the mix. Instead, we need to understand that Jesus will give all of us things to be accountable for, responsible for, things to do on behalf of the kingdom. And when he gets back, he's going to check with us to see whether or not we used it, whether or not we did him proud. And this guy apparently didn't bother to do anything. Now, you know what the coin of the kingdom is for the kingdom of heaven? It's people. Jesus values people and souls more than anything else. So when Jesus comes back, he is not going to be checking in with Christians to see whether or not we built up lots of church funds, or built big buildings, or acquired very nice properties. What he's going to be checking in on is, did you bring other people to me? Did you help people get saved? And so that's what all of us should be focused on. If we are not the ones that can do it one-on-one, we should at least be supporting others that are good at that. You know, being the team players. You know, on a team, it's not all the players that put the basket or the ball in the basket, or the ball across the goal line, or the ball into the goal. The other players, though, are just important to getting the job done. They are the supporting players. And so Jesus is basically been looking, did you support the idea and the promotion of getting people saved? This guy didn't. He didn't even bother. And he says, I knew that you wouldn't like it if I lost anybody, so I didn't bother at all. And Jesus says back to him in the parable, he said to him, I will condemn you with your own words, you wicked servant. You knew that I was a severe man, taking what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank, and at my coming I might have collected it with interest? So you should have done at least the minimum amount of support to the mission. And he said to those who stood by, take the mina from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. And they said, Lord, he already has 10 minas. Verse number 26, he says back, I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given, but from the one who has, even what he has will be taken away. So in the parable explanation, I think, we see that the one who didn't even bother loses relationship, while the one who had done so much in support of the kingdom got even more to be responsible for in the next phase. And people did try to object to that, by the way, and Jesus' response was, hey, he did a good job, he's going to get more responsibility. Now, verse 27 bothers a lot of people, and I don't think it should. Because when Jesus comes back in the book of Revelation, and also in the book of Daniel, he is coming back to save his people, but also to bring judgment against his detractors, against his enemies. And that's exactly what Jesus presents here in verse 27. But as for these enemies of mine, who did not want me to reign over them, bring them here and slaughter them before me. Now that is hard stuff to hear, but that is where we're going. There is a day of reckoning coming, and Jesus is the one that will decide who is saved and who is lost. And it will all be contingent on whether or not they were willing to have him as their King of Kings and their Lord of Lords. Now, in the three synoptic gospels that we've been working on, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the next event sequentially is the triumphal entry, which will take place on the 10th day of the first month. The travel that we've been looking at the last couple of days is happening on the 9th day, the day previous to that. And so we have to shift over to the Gospel of John now in order to pick up the events of the night before the triumphal entry. So John chapter number 12 says, 6 days before the Passover. Now, Jesus is arriving at Bethany before the sun goes down on the 9th. And so that would be 6 days before Passover. So 6 days before Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. The situation of Bethany is that it is on the east side of the Mount of Olives, which is east of the city of Jerusalem. So Bethany City is about a mile and a half, I think, from the Temple Mount. When you're coming up from Jericho on the Roman road that existed at this time, there is a split that happens on this road where you can continue on through Bethphage up and over the top of the Mount of Olives and then down to Jerusalem City. Or you can kind of curve to the southeast and go to Bethany. So Jesus doesn't arrive at Jerusalem on the 9th. Instead, he diverts to the place that he is in the custom of staying, Bethany, at the house where Mary and Martha and Lazarus live. Now, verse 2 says that they gave a dinner for him there at Bethany, and Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at the table. Now, this dinner would have happened after the sun went down on that evening of his arrival. So we've now moved to the Jewish 10th day of the month. So it is actually Sunday night after they've traveled all day. And we have information about this special dinner in all four Gospels. In Matthew and Mark, it is told in association with the choice of Judas Iscariot to betray Jesus to the Sanhedrin for cash. So we have to go to Matthew 26:6 to see it, and Mark 14:3 to see it. And it gives a little bit more information in both those passages. It says, when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper. This is my reason for believing that Martha and Simon were married. And I shared this with you at the time that we were talking about the resurrection of Lazarus. I believe Martha is the oldest of the three siblings here, that she is married to Simon, who was a leper, probably cleansed by Jesus. And that's what started the relationship between this family and Jesus. And Jesus has been staying at this home every time he comes to the Jerusalem area for probably a couple, maybe 3 years by now. And Mary, I believe, is probably an unmarried sister still living with Martha and Simon. And that Lazarus, I think, might be the younger brother of the two sisters who might be of minority age staying here, that he's perhaps the ward of Simon and Martha. So here's the picture then that we've built so far. Jesus is back in the home that he's been in many, many times. Simon is there. Martha is there. She's cooking the meal. She's working on it because she's the head of the household from the female equation. And Mary is there as well, because the Gospel of Luke tells the story from a slightly different angle, which I always find interesting because it seems to me that Luke went out of his way in his research to talk to a lot of the ladies. And so he may have gotten this information straight from Mary or Martha. So it is Luke chapter number 10, starting at verse 38. It says, now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village. It's not named here, but it's Bethany. And a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home or her house. And so that would be the house at Bethany. And Martha is the wife of Simon the leper. And it's their house that the dinner is happening in. Verse 39. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. So here's Mary. She's in the room with the apostles, soaking up everything that Jesus has to say, while, verse 40, Martha was distracted with much serving. So she is frantic to put this meal together in a wonderful way for Jesus and the apostles and others that are traveling with them. And it might not have just been the men. There might have been some of the wives and kids with them, since this is Passover time and it was customary for the families to come as a group. So Martha has suddenly found herself playing hostess to a great big group of people. And she is not happy that little sister Mary is not working with her. How do we know? Because she tells the Lord that. She went up to Jesus and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? So she is rather upset. And she basically wants Jesus to tell Mary to get herself into the kitchen area and help Martha with all this extra work. Tell her then to help me. Verse 41. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you're anxious and troubled about so many things, but one thing is necessary, or only one thing is necessary. Jesus tries to help Martha understand that it's not important for her to put this big spread on. That it's not important for her to go out of her way to do all this extra stuff. And I think all of us understand that there are Marthas and there are Marys. I know that there are a lot of Marthas that have welcomed me into their homes, and they just go all out to try to provide everything. And they drive themselves frantic for it. And guess what I very often say to them? No, you don't need to worry about that. Don't worry about extra, you know, covers on the bed. Don't worry about whether the pillow is sufficient. Don't worry about whether you made a nice dessert or whether there's a... Don't worry about any of that stuff. It's, don't worry. Just a little bit would be fine. That's where Jesus is at. But it goes deeper than that. Martha was trying to take away from Mary just being able to soak up the presence of Jesus and listen to his words. And that's not right. What she chose was appropriate. In fact, Jesus goes on and says that, doesn't he? Mary has chosen the good portion which will not be taken from her. What was her good portion? Listening to Jesus talk about the kingdom. Now, do you know what else he might have been talking about? In fact, I would insist that he must have said it at some point. I think he may have repeated the idea that in a few more days, he is going to be betrayed. He is going to be put on trial, mocked, scourged, executed, but that he would rise again on the third day. I think he may have said all those things again. And Mary heard that, and it must have made an impression upon her. Because what does she do? Let's go back to John's account, John chapter 12, verse number 3. Now keep in mind, we've got Matthew 26 and Mark chapter 14 that's telling the same story. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment, about a liter. So think about half of a pop bottle of expensive ointment made from pure nard, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. Mark, who is telling Peter's story, says it this way. As he was reclining at the table, a woman, that'd be Mary, came with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly. She broke the flask and poured it over his head. Same thing is repeated in the Matthew account, that she poured it on his head as he reclined at table. And not just on his head, also on his feet. And she's wiping his feet with her hair to make sure that it doesn't just drip off onto the floor. So that is what she's done to Jesus at this dinner table on this night after she'd been listening to his teaching. And we know, because I'm going to drop out of the story right now and leave a cliffhanger, we know that the people at the table were shocked by her behavior, because this was exceptionally expensive stuff. I believe that it was probably things that they had purchased to continue the funeral rites for their brother Lazarus, something that went unused because of the resurrection. This expensive stuff, I believe she was putting on him because she thought he was going to die soon. And she wanted to prepare his body. And I'm not just coming up with that out of thin air. Jesus will pretty much say that about her. But we've run out of time, so let's mark our place right there. Have a great weekend. Come back next week, and we'll get back into the Word.